1-800-793-9159.
The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. And now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we're tackling optic neuritis with guest expert Dr. Mitch Drucker of the USF Eye Institute. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of health education. And we are proud to share with you, as we do every Sunday, that our fifth annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium is but 7 weeks away. And we are already on track, looking at the list of registrants, 25% ahead of last year. And last year we had about 1,800. So we are looking good to break 2,000 women, and I should say about 10% of those are guys, 2,000 men and women, women and men, looking to attend and share Saturday, March 27th with us at the Tampa Convention Center. We're very proud to share with you that our keynote speaker for that day will be USF President Dr. Judy Genshaft. The MC of that event is Honorary Chair Stacy Scheibel, who we all know from News Channel 8 News Anchor. And we have 22 seminars already. And I should also mention that it's all free. The activities are free, and that includes the 22 seminars, which includes cardiac disease, colon cancer, cervical, ovarian, and uterine cancer, nutrition and cancer prevention, obesity in women, screening for breast cancer, migraines and headaches, fertility and family, menopause, bladder incontinence, osteoporosis, sleep disorders, breast cancer, dry eye, heart care and disease prevention for women, skin cancer, diabetes, raising your child without going crazy, allergies and asthma, gynecological cancer, what you need to know, plus looking more youthful without general anesthesia, and what is turning out to be very popular, of course, this year, and with the economy as it is, a special seminar on financial wellness. 22 seminars. In addition, we have fitness classes, including yoga, Pilates, kickboxing, Tai Chi stretching, Zumba fitness, circuit training, resistance training, as well as health screenings and wellness chair massages, all free. And our sponsors, we've had Memorial Hospital of Tampa as sponsor from our inception, as well as Moffitt Cancer Center. And just this year, we are proud to share, we have the additional sponsorship of USF Health and St. Joseph's Women's Hospital. And Wachovia Bank is also an educational sponsor. So we're very proud to share this with everyone there. We do need you to register for the event. You can register online at focusonfemales.com. Go to the registration tab, fill the information out. It is important that to do this, to reserve and ensure you have a seat in the seminars you wish to attend. Okay, I want to thank my special guest here, Dr. Mitch Drucker, for being patient with me as I share with each and every one of you this free opportunity to take advantage of this information available. Mitch is a neuro-ophthalmologist at the University of South Florida Eye Institute, as well as the Department of Ophthalmology Residency Program Director. He is an attending physician at the James Haley Veterans Hospital and is Chief of Ophthalmology at Tampa General Hospital. Dr. Drucker graduated from Cornell University and the University of Florida College of Medicine. Mitch completed his internal medicine internship at Brown University and ophthalmology residency at the State University of New York in Brooklyn. He served a two-year fellowship at the Wills Eye Hospital in Philadelphia, studying under some neuro-ophthalmology greats such as Dr. Peter Savino, Norman Schatz, and Bob Surgot. Dr. Drucker has been a practicing neuro-ophthalmologist in Tampa since 1987 and has been listed as a best doctor in America for the past 14 years, and it is my pleasure to see you once again, Mitch, my fellow New York Yankee Grapefruit League fan.
Thanks for having me back, Steve. It's good to be here.
Okay, optic neuritis. And I should also mention to everybody, we did a show with Mitch some time ago on pseudotumor cerebri. If you've been newly diagnosed with this disease, or if you want to listen to that show for any reason at all, it is on our website. If you go to, again, focusonfemales.com, homepage, left lower corner, is the link to the radio show page. You can scroll down. It was in 2009. Look up the pseudotumor cerebri show, and the podcast is there for you to download and listen. Today, optic neuritis. For a quick review, Mitch, optic nerve. What is the optic nerve, and what is optic neuritis?
The optic nerve is actually a tract of the brain. It's not just one nerve. It's about 1.2 million fibers going back to the brain from each eye. And optic neuritis would be an inflammation of the optic nerve. Itis, the suffix, means inflammation, just like tonsillitis, appendicitis, bursitis. So this is an inflammation of the nerve. And by inflammation, what's meant is an immune response. If you skin your knee and the knee gets red, hot, painful, and swollen, it's doing that because a lot of inflammatory cells are migrating to that area to try and fend off a bacterial or viral infection from the cut or from the abrasion that you've got. Same thing is true in the optic nerve. The optic nerve gets inflamed from either infection or from autoimmune problems. It can also get inflamed from other disease processes that affect the rest of the body, such as sarcoidosis, multiple sclerosis, even syphilis.
Okay. I see a caller on the line, and that's Kathy. Okay, Kathy, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. It's great of you to share part of your Sunday with me and with Dr. Mitch Drucker on our show on optic neuritis.
Thank you.
And do you have a question for us?
Well, no. I recently experienced optic neuritis.
Okay.
And wanted to give a little bit of insight of my symptoms.
Okay. Well, that's great to have you aboard. Why don't you? How old are you, Kathy?
I am 48.
Okay. All right. Now, are you a patient of Dr. Drucker's?
I am.
Okay. 48 years old. And when did you develop optic neuritis?
It was the week between Christmas and the week of Christmas and right before New Year's.
Okay.
Came on very sudden, pain in my right eye. The pain, you know, felt like the nerve, could not move my head or my eye side to side, up or down, without feeling a lot of pain. Felt like it was a nerve type of issue.
All right, so sudden onset, pain in the right eye, unable to move your head or your eye without pain. Tell us about the vision.
The vision initially, I did not lose my vision initially. It was about 4 days after that it started to go downhill pretty quickly. From the onset, I felt like the best way to describe it would be like I had Vaseline over my eye.
Okay.
But I could see. It just felt kind of fuzzy. But towards the end, right before diagnosis, my vision had, gone to where I felt like I couldn't see out of the eye at all.
And had you any previous history of eye disease or of systemic disease?
No.
Healthy woman otherwise?
Yes.
And this was just the one eye?
Just the one eye.
So what did you do at that point?
Initially, I went to an optometrist.
Okay.
Rather than an ophthalmologist, looking for the referral. But everything looked normal. Thought maybe it was just some kind of, infection. Saw my primary care doctor, and they sent me for an MRI. And by the following, that was on a Sunday, by the following Monday, I was in the hospital.
All right, so the MRI, did the MRI show anything?
The MRI was negative.
All right, so we went to an optometrist and your primary care doctor. They have, the optometrist didn't find any, there were no findings on that exam?
No.
Did you have any double vision?
I did not.
Okay, so I guess during that exam you were able to move your eyes?
I was able to move my eyes, but it was
painful.
Very painful.
Okay. And then the primary care ordered an MRI, which was normal. At what point did you seek Dr. Drucker's consultation?
As a follow-up, I think he was out during that period of time. That was a specialist that the ophthalmologist wanted me to see. But as it was, the pain had gotten so bad and the vision had gotten so bad, he recommended for me just to go to the hospital.
Okay.
For further tests. And it was there that I was diagnosed.
Okay. Mitch, what's your recollection of when you first saw Kathy?
I first heard about Kathy when she was admitted to Tampa General Hospital. We have a residency program that covers the emergency room and the inpatient consultation service at Tampa General. So when a resident sees a patient that has a neuro-ophthalmologic problem, I get called whether I'm in town, whether I'm on vacation. Cell phones reach all over the universe. So they told me about her condition, which was essentially classic for inflammation of the optic nerve. Pain for the first few days, followed by visual loss, pain on eye movement, especially on up gaze, with profound loss of vision on day 3 to 5. The fact that she came in with an MRI that was normal was a good thing because it essentially puts her in the category of somebody who may not develop systemic disease from it, and I'll go into that a little later. But we did offer her high doses of intravenous steroids, and she was admitted to the neurology service rather than to the ophthalmology service since I wasn't available.
Mm-hmm.
And they treated her with, I believe, 5 days of high-dose intravenous steroids. And this is a little bit of an exception to the trials that have been done since 1988, where we generally do 3 days, but 3 or 5 days is an acceptable course. And her vision improved dramatically from 2400, which is seeing just the big E on the eye chart, to being able to read the 2025 line, which is just one line below 2020, which is standard vision in the world.
Now, Kathy, what was your feeling as you were admitted to the hospital? I imagine there was some serious concern about this eye of yours.
There was concern, and the hospital, the attending was really wonderful, but explained there are a lot of statistics that are around having something like this. I think the MS was one of the major statistics, so they wanted to run some additional
okay.
tests.
MS, of course, multiple sclerosis.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And the other was whether you have a viral infection or a bacterial infection. So I was a little nervous about what we might ultimately find. I was actually relieved that it was not a tumor because, with that kind of pressure, you know, the mind tends to wander to the worst scenario. So, you know, once having a diagnosis, I felt much better.
Mm-hmm. Diagnosis of optic neuritis.
Right.
Had you heard of this disease before?
I had not heard of it before. And then I, you know, later found out my sister-in-law had it 14 years ago. But other than that, I had not heard of it.
Well, this begs the question, Mitch, is there a family history or genetic predisposition to this disease?
Not for a sister-in-law, but for somebody who is genetically related, yes, there is a genetic predisposition. And that predisposition is not so much for optic neuritis, but for multiple sclerosis or other autoimmune diseases, which can lead to optic neuritis.
Okay. And, okay. So there you were, and the recommended dose of that, or therapy at that point, was high-dose steroids, and I'm sure they explained to you trials, the data that's out there. Why don't we take a moment at this point in time and talk a little bit about, before we do that, let me ask you, was there any difference or change in your color vision, Kathy?
There was not. That was one of the original tests that was done, and, you know, other than everything was a blur, I don't think that there was a lot of difference in the color.
Okay. Mitch, would you address the therapy for optic neuritis at this point?
Sure. Prior to something called the optic neuritis treatment trial, oral steroids were the mainstay of therapy for optic neuritis in the world. The optic neuritis treatment trial began in 1988, and it was based here at USF in Tampa. Dr. Roy Beck was the primary investigator, and the optic neuritis treatment trial over the next 15 years branched into the longitudinal optic neuritis study. The data that Roy used to justify the $4.1 million grant from the NIH came from information from Wills Eye Hospital, where they had been using high doses of intravenous steroids for a number of years. It was felt that high doses of intravenous steroids could get more steroid into the body and treat the inflammation more effectively. However, there was no data to support that with a good multi-centered study. So Roy got the best statisticians in the country, signed up 15 centers around the nation, had visual field testing done, and read at one particular site, and also had MRIs done on all patients. The study lasted for 3 years and has provided all the information, essentially, that we have on optic neuritis and its natural history and treatment since then.
And we'll come right back after a quick break and discuss more. Be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Dr. Steve Maskin. Today we're tackling optic neuritis, and with my special guest, Dr. Mitch Drucker of the USF Eye Institute. And for each and one, every one of you there with a question about optic neuritis or even optic nerve disease, please call us. Now is the time, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Everywhere else, toll free, 877-969-8600, and we are streaming live online. We are discussing optic neuritis, and on the line is Kathy. Kathy's a patient who was recently admitted to Tampa General Hospital and was managed in part by Dr. Drucker. She is a 48-year-old patient with optic neuritis. And Kathy, are you still with us? Kathy, are you still with us?
Yes.
Okay. So we're talking about admission, well, the symptoms that developed in your right eye between, I think, Christmas and New Year's, you said.
Yes.
And you were admitted to the hospital due to basically significant loss in vision down to like the big E on the eye chart, as well as pain in the eye and pain with eye movement. And you were admitted and treated with high dose intravenous steroids. And Dr. Drucker was discussing the literature foundation for that treatment.
Steve, the optic neuritis treatment trial divided patients into three groups: oral placebo, oral steroids, and intravenous steroids. And what we found was quite remarkable. Oral steroids not only didn't help, but could actually lead to a second episode of optic neuritis in the same or fellow eye.
Do we understand why that happens?
There are a number of hypotheses. The one that has stuck is that this is an immune response where the body is attacking the optic nerve as if it is a foreign body. When that happens, you can have lingering antibody response if you don't treat it completely. Oral steroids may not treat completely, and the effectiveness is therefore 50%, 75%. So the antibodies are still around, and they can attack the same eye or the opposite eye.
So when it gets worse with oral prednisone, it's not an immediate thing. It may... that recurrence is somewhat delayed.
Exactly. It's okay. A recurrence not making the particular situation worse at that time. Mm-hmm. And this was very surprising to a number of people, and it was actually issued as an immediate warning that originated down on Davis Islands, where Dr. Beck and I had our office, and the information went up to the NIH, and then that was transferred from the NIH for the ophthalmology section over to neurology. Neurology sent word to their headquarters, which was in Minneapolis, and they sent word to their public relations person to disseminate the information. And that public relations person was Steve Sergey, who is by Memorial Hospital here in Tampa. So
Full circle.
The information went up and around and back down within an hour or two.
All right, now.
So I'm sorry. The other wing of the study, the intravenous steroids, got people better faster, but not necessarily to a better level of vision than they would have gotten to without treatment. Mm-hmm. And there was found to be a protective effect for other signs or symptoms of multiple sclerosis for up to 2 years. But after 2 years, that all evened out.
Okay. Were there any relapses on the intravenous steroid?
Yes, there were some.
But not to the same extent as the oral steroid.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. All right. Very good. Now, Kathy, how are you doing at this time? You had your 5 days of oral, intravenous steroid. How are you doing at this point? This is about, 6 weeks later, so.
I'm doing very well, thank you. The pain is gone. I still have a slight pain when I look, up in the corner, but I think with time that will improve. Feel very blessed to have my vision back.
Excellent. You still have your color vision?
I still have my color vision.
Okay. Do you have any questions for Dr. Drucker here at this point, since we have him in the studio, that you'd like to ask about your disease that you haven't had answered yet?
I don't think so. Okay. I do obviously have concern of having it come back again.
Mm-hmm. Mitch, what's the chances of that?
The chances of recurrence of anybody with optic neuritis who has a normal MRI is the same as anybody in our society. Were Kathy to have had even one lesion on her MRI, the numbers would be completely different. The optic neuritis treatment trial and the longitudinal optic neuritis study for the next 15 years showed us that about 72% of patients who have at least one lesion on their MRI will go on to develop MS. However, with no lesions on the MRI, only about 25% of patients do. It's not a clean bill of health. We don't tell patients that they're definitely not going to get it, but there's a threefold increase, essentially, in the chance of developing MS over 15 years if you'd had an MRI lesion.
That's excellent news for you, Kathy.
Yes, I'm excited.
Well, listen, we'd like to thank you for joining us today on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, and please take the opportunity, go to our website, and don't miss this wonderful free admission extravaganza, healthcare information extravaganza on Saturday, March 27th. Register and join us and select from those 22 seminars you can attend and get even smarter.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathy. On the line is Jennifer from Lakeland. Jennifer, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Good morning, gentlemen. How's everybody doing today?
We're doing great.
Good. I have a very quick question for the doctor. Just a little bit of history. I have a congenital myelinated optic nerve in my right eye. I was born with strabismus and have had multiple lateral and vertical muscle surgeries on my eyes starting when I was about a year old. I'm now 43, and I carry this little card in my wallet in case I'm ever in a vehicle accident and can't communicate that to healthcare professionals.
Right.
And I was just wondering if there's any – I don't really know a lot about it, and I've never really done any research on it, and I thought maybe you could just give me a quick quick rundown.
All right. So you're asking about the congenital myelinated optic nerve, if that has any clinical importance at all.
Correct.
Okay. Mitch, swing away.
Very briefly, no, it has no clinical importance. And I'll explain why it's apparent. Nerves throughout the body have to send a message back to the brain or to the spinal column. To hasten that message, nerves are wrapped in something called myelin, which is a fatty tissue, and it allows the message to go much, much faster. There is no myelin of the optic nerve in the eye. Remember, I said that the optic nerve is essentially a tract of the
right.
brain. It goes from the eye all the way back to the brain. Right behind the eye, though, there's a lot of myelin around the nerve. Trauma or surgery of the optic nerve can stimulate the body to make more myelin, and then the nerve will appear myelinated inside the eye. And I don't know if the surgery that you had for your strabismus when they operated on the muscles around the eye may have stimulated that, or whether you would just born with it. But myelinated nerve fibers inside the eye clinically will mean nothing to you. It may speed up the message going back to the brain, and I think it's terrific that you're carrying that card with you, because it is a very consternating sign for many people when they look into the eye, many physicians in an emergency room or neurologists when they're looking through an undilated pupil. Those myelinated nerve fibers, which are pure white, can make it appear that the nerve is swollen, and it will bring on a whole series of tests, not just right. MRIs and MRAs, but spinal tap, etc.,
right.
if they think that your optic nerve is pathologically elevated. So
right.
I'm glad whoever told you to carry that card or suggested it did that for you.
Well, I have a great ophthalmologist in Charlotte County, so I'm happy to hear that. Thank you.
All right. Jennifer, any other questions?
Yes, sir.
Any other questions for you today?
No, I'm good. Thank you so much. I'm enjoying the show. Thank
all,
you guys
all right.
a lot.
Keep tuning in. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so long now. On that same note, an optic nerve that is, say, like an optic nerve that's full of drusen, an optic nerve that's covered with myelinated sheaths, can it be difficult also to identify glaucomatous changes in these nerves?
Yes, it can. Steve used a couple of words there that may not be familiar to many of the people out there. Optic nerve head drusen are little concretions of calcium that are deposited into the nerve, and it gives a lumpy, bumpy appearance to the nerve. Just to start out with, just to picture what we see when an eye doctor or any doctor looks into the eye, if you picture the optic nerve as a cable going from the eye back to the brain, and if you were to squeeze that nerve and then picture that nerve as being a balloon with the end bulging out when you squeeze it, that's what we see when we look in the eye, the end of the nerve bulging out. Now, it can be bulging out from high pressure inside the brain. It could be bulging because of a lack of blood flow to the nerve. You can get essentially a stroke to the nerve that will cause swelling. You can have optic neuritis, as we've already mentioned. But then Steve mentioned a number of things that can give you what's called a congenitally anomalous optic nerve, and it would be called pseudopapillitis or pseudopapilledema, pseudo being the prefix for false. And these drusen can definitely appear to make the nerve look swollen. And it's very important for those patients who have been diagnosed with optic nerve head drusen to do just what Jennifer did. Carry something in your wallet saying that, because, again, it will be very important if you're in a car accident for doctors to know that.
Excellent. Tim from Tampa, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. How are you doing today?
Good. How's it going, Dr. Drucker?
Hey, Tim.
This is... I'm one of Dr. Drucker's residents at USF.
Okay, good.
I just had a quick question for Dr. Drucker. Mm-hmm. Of all of the adverse effects that corticosteroids can cause, which ones do you think we should touch on with our patients when we're giving a short course, say, with treating optic neuritis?
The very first thing that we should touch on is the symptom and sign that is not related to the dose or the duration. And that would be aseptic necrosis of the femoral head. The body has bones that can become very brittle from exposure to steroids. Long-term exposure to oral or intravenous steroids can cause any bone in the body to become brittle and break. However, some people can have an idiosyncratic, meaning it's not related to dosage, it's just being exposed to the steroid, can cause a major problem with this particular bone, which allows the leg to insert into the hip. That would be the first thing. The second thing I would tell them about is diabetes. Diabetes can be heralded or brought on by exposure to oral steroids, intravenous steroids, and this can be irreversible. Most patients, once they're taken off of the steroid, their blood sugars will normalize. However, if they have a family history or a body that is predisposed to developing steroids, they can get permanent diabetes that could be insulin-dependent or oral-dependent, oral agent-dependent. So that's very crucial that they be told about that. In addition, patients can develop peptic ulcer disease. They can have a bleeding ulcer from the steroid use. They can have increased susceptibility to infection. And the major thing that happens with our patients when we hit them with these high doses of intravenous steroids is a sleep disturbance while they're in the hospital. They have a very difficult time sleeping, and it's a good idea to give them a sleeping pill if they do develop this. There are remote chances of patients having psychotic problems with steroid use. But it is very, very uncommon. In fact, there's nobody in the optic neuritis treatment trial who was treated had any major problem from the steroids. But anybody admitted should have a fasting blood sugar drawn on the second and third day. They should be covered with Maalox or Mylanta and a antacid at bedtime, either Pepcid or Tagamet, to try to prevent peptic ulcer disease from developing. And it's just very important to always go over the risks and benefits of any medication that you're giving a patient, and always end, after you've given them the list, with, and just with any medication, if you develop a rash or hives, you stop the medicine immediately.
How's that, Tim?
Yeah, thank you very much. Those are four things that I will remember next time I have to admit and treat someone with those intravenous corticosteroids.
Okay. Thank you for your participation today.
Thanks, Dr. Drucker.
Take care, Tim. See you tomorrow.
All right. Bye. So long. All right, we're going to take a quick break and be right back with more. The phone number here to call in with your questions, 289-1860. That's 289-1860. Outside of Hillsborough County, 877-969-8600. Now's the time. Call in with your questions.
The American people think by about a 60 to 40 margin right now that what they're doing regarding health care, for instance, is a disaster and they should back off, and that no bill is better than the bill that they're talking about. There's a problem when you have had go-along-to-get-along Republicans who were asleep at the switch and spending like crazy when they were in the majority. We can't go there again.
The Jax Files, Saturday morning at 11 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Focus on
Okay, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Dr. Steve Maskin. Today we're tackling optic neuritis with special guest expert Dr. Mitch Drucker, neuro-ophthalmologist at the USF Eye Institute. And today, now's the time to call in with your questions on optic neuritis or other optic nerve disease. Our number here in Hillsborough County is 289-1860. 289-1860. Outside of Hillsborough County, it's toll-free, 877-969-8600, 877-969-8600. We had Sonia on the line. We lost her. Sonia, now's the time to call back with your question. We're ready for you. Okay, Mitch, you wanted to make a comment about pseudopapilledema before we get started. Go ahead.
Sure. Jennifer had mentioned that she carries a card with her to explain that she has myelinated nerve fibers, which can simulate something called papilledema, swelling of the optic nerve due to elevated intracranial pressure. Two things need to be brought up. Number one, just because you have pseudopapilledema doesn't mean you can't get true papilledema. So if you are in a car accident, don't refuse an MRI, don't refuse a CAT scan, but it's important for the doctors looking in to know that you do have an underlying problem.
Excellent.
The second problem that patients need to be aware of, even though you have pseudopapilledema, well, when you have pseudopapilledema, some of those conditions may prevent the nerve from swelling. And you had brought up something, Steve, before about glaucoma. Can it make it difficult to diagnose glaucoma? Definitely. Optic nerve head drusen can make it difficult for cups to develop in the optic nerve. And a cup is a little central depression in the circular optic nerve. As we look at it head on, we see a circle in the eye. And in the middle of that circle is this cup. And that central depression is usually about 3/10 of the surface area. With optic nerve head drusen or other congenitally anomalous optic nerves, the nerve may not to be able to become cupped out, and the specialist needs to be consulted because the general care physician who might be just taking a pressure in the eye might not be aware that this cupping can be masked. So anybody who does have a tendency towards glaucoma in the family or has been diagnosed as having an elevated pressure in the eye should definitely see a glaucoma specialist.
Ultimately, as a diagnostic consideration, one has to have a lower threshold and be ready to initiate some diagnostic evaluations because it can be more difficult to evaluate the presence of or the progression of disease in those diseases or those accompanying physical findings that preclude direct observation of the optic nerve head.
Sure. And optic nerve head drusen, which you mentioned, which are the little calcium concretions in the nerve, can actually cause visual field defects which mimic glaucoma.
All right. Sonia, you're back with us. Welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thanks, Dr. Maskin.
Okay. How can we help you today?
Well, you said that MS can bring on optic neuritis. What are some of the other diseases that can bring on optic neuritis?
Okay, Mitch.
The list goes on for about 100 different items, Sonia. But at the top are viral illnesses. Children can get a viral optic neuritis, which can give them bilateral optic neuritis. In fact, in children, 50% of the optic neurituses are bilateral, whereas in the optic neuritis treatment trial in adults, it was only about 7%. And one thing that I hadn't mentioned before, there are two types of optic neuritis. There can be a retrobulbar optic neuritis where the nerve is swollen behind the eye, and when the doctor looks in, the nerve looks absolutely normal. And papillitis, where the nerve head itself, the papilla, is elevated. Patients with MS generally have the retrobulbar form. But to answer your question, other diseases that can cause optic neuritis include lupus or any collagen vascular disease, sarcoidosis, which is a generalized inflammatory condition around the body that can give you problems with your lungs or liver or brain. Some patients can get optic neuritis after a flu shot, or I had a patient recently who had optic neuritis as an 11-year-old, and it was thought at that time by Dr. Beck that the possibility existed that it was related to her MMR, her measles, mumps, and rubella shot, that the body geared up an immune response and that immune response attacked the optic nerve. And as with many other diseases, many other conditions in the body, syphilis is something that always has to be ruled out.
And how about TB, other infectious
Tuberculosis
diseases?
Can do it. Vitamin deficiencies, Vitamin B12 deficiency, folate deficiency can do it. And the key here is to make sure that your doctor doesn't just say, okay, we're going to put you on steroids. You really do need to have somebody look into these other causes, especially if it is not typical optic neuritis. Typical being a woman under the age of 45 with pain on extraocular movements.
So really, Kathy is a classic case.
Yes. Men are about one out of five times it'll be a man, four out of five times it'll be a woman getting optic neuritis. We define it essentially as an inflammation or an optic neuropathy that gets better. If it doesn't get better, we generally say, well, it was probably ischemic or a lack of blood flow to the nerve.
It gets better within?
Generally, without treatment, there will be improvement over about a two-month period. With intravenous steroids, that period could be 2 weeks to a month. So it hastens recovery.
When the natural course, improvement over 2 months, during the natural course, does it start to improve?
It can start to improve a week out, but it can improve to up to a year out. So if your vision hasn't come back completely, and again, in the optic neuritis treatment trial and the longitudinal optic neuritis study, we found that 72 to 75% of patients will, after 15 years, have 20/20 acuity in that involved eye, which means that 28% of patients will not get all the way back to 20/20. And the correlation for bad visual outcome would be primarily worse visual acuity going into the study. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, we've mentioned visual acuity, and we talked about the big E on the eye chart. Just to put it in a framework for people to understand a little bit more about it, when we look at the eye chart, we see black, what are called optotypes, letters on a white background. There is tremendous contrast there. One of the first things to go with optic nerve disease is your contrast sensitivity. So unless there is a great difference between the letter being black and the background being white, the patient may have tremendous difficulty discerning what they're looking at. The smaller the letter, the acuity is measured in a fraction. The big E is 2400, and standard vision is 20/20. And I keep on saying standard. It doesn't mean best acuity, but it's standard acuity. It means that the patient being tested at 20 feet sees what the standard person sees at 20 feet. 20/40 acuity means the person being tested at 20 feet sees what the standard person sees at 40 feet. 20/300 acuity means that somebody who's being tested at 20 feet sees what the person at the end of a football field would see on that same eye chart.
I'm going to ask a question. I'm going to bring it back to a clinical question for you. Okay. You mentioned the common patient that gets optic neuritis is a female and with pain in eye movement, less than 45 years of age. Is the typical case for a man the same symptoms, same age group, same symptoms?
Yes, yes. Over that age group, we generally see patients developing ischemic optic neuropathy. Ischemic meaning lack of blood flow or essentially a stroke to that optic nerve.
Okay, so is it then your recommendation? Let's say someone sees their doctor and with a 3-day history of optic neuritis. So it's not clear whether it's classic optic neuritis or something else. And we just reviewed a list of things that it could be, including infectious disease such as syphilis, TB, and I think cat scratch fever is another possibility, and so forth. So what is the recommended state-of-the-art workup for a person who presents within a few days of what seems to be optic neuritis?
An MRI with gadolinium, which is a chemical that is injected to
contrast.
It's not the same thing as contrast, and that's okay. Why I hesitated to use the word, because people who are allergic to contrast material are not allergic to gadolinium. People who have an iodine allergy can still have gadolinium. It will allow lesions to appear brighter on scans of the optic nerve and of the brain. I would also have patients get a CBC, a complete blood count, to make sure they're not anemic, because anemia can cause a lack of blood flow into the eye, and it can look just like optic neuritis. A B12 and a folate level to make sure that those vitamins and minerals are not deficient. An ANA, an anti-nuclear antibody, which can investigate the possibility of collagen vascular disease. However, nobody in the optic neuritis treatment trial had the development of collagen vascular disease, but it is something that is easy to test for and should be obtained in addition to an FTA, which is a fluorescent treponemal antibody titer, which is used to test for syphilis. If somebody does have a cat, they can, as you mentioned, get cat scratch fever. Cat scratch fever can be diagnosed with a what's called a Bartonella titer. However, the classic picture of optic neuritis due to cat scratch fever includes problems in the retina also. Little concretions develop in the retina, and the physician looking in will see a star pattern in the macula.
Wait, we only have 2 minutes.
Okay. And the last test would be for sarcoid, which would be an angiotensin converting enzyme. And depending on the patient's other signs or symptoms or their history, we'll determine what other tests would be obtained. We would not immediately go to a lumbar puncture unless the MRI was positive for lesions that were consistent with MS.
How about to rule out meningitis?
If the patient has no fever, no neck stiffness, and no severe headache, would not consider meningitis, but if we did consider meningitis, they would need a spinal tap immediately.
Okay, so ultimately, and this is important to go through this differential diagnosis, because the treatment may very well be the high-dose intravenous steroid, which you don't want to give if there's an infectious disease as a cause of this disease, as a background factor in this disease.
Correct, and the optic neuritis treatment trial, we admitted patients up to day 8, and infection is very unusual here, but you will get your labs back quickly, and there is no urgency in giving the intravenous steroids. You can wait 24 hours until you get tests back because, as I mentioned, it just gets you better faster, not necessarily to a better level of vision.
Sonia, you have another quick question?
No.
Okay.
Dr. Drucker answered my question. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Sonia, very much for joining us today. Mitch, I'll ask you to summarize, leave our listeners with an overarching message that you'd like to share with them today.
Any painful unilateral or bilateral visual loss should be referred to an ophthalmologist by a family care physician or an internist. Very frequently, doctors, especially in the emergency room, will just give an antibiotic saying you've got conjunctivitis. But if you have visual loss, you need to see an eye specialist.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dr. Drucker. And next week we have right here Dr. Carol Cox, the topic hormone replacement therapy and menopause, followed by the following week eating disorders, followed by infections from pets, colorectal cancers, kidney stones, lymphoma, myeloma, and so on. This is Dr. Steve Maskin, wishing each and every one of you a healthy week. Don't forget to register for the Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium on our website, focusonfemales.com. Have a great week, and we'll speak with you next week. Bye-bye.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL. Focus.